welcome to Girl Gotta Hike the Podcast, episode 25. I'm your host, Melissa Goodwin, outdoor guide, photographer, and founder of Girl Gotta Hike. This podcast features interviews with adventurous women, plus trail tips and hiking advice for those who want to disconnect from the daily grind. On today's episode, I go for a hike in the Catskills with local artist and ceramicist extraordinaire, Cheyenne Mallow. Cheyenne and her partner, Zach, handmake functional pottery, such as mugs, bowls, and dishes that feature topographic map imagery of mountains, hiking trails, and rivers out of their home studio. I've been a big fan of Cheyenne's style ever since I first laid eyes on one of her mugs back in 2017. As someone who is drawn to all things hiking maps and coffee drinking, I certainly fall right into her target market and have been happily adding her pieces to my kitchen cabinets ever since. My fangirling got a major boost last summer when I got to chat with her in person at an event in the Catskills and find out just how much she beams with Midwestern friendliness. During this conversation, we talk about her love for hiking and her connection to her surroundings, her artistic process, the importance of residency programs in the arts, as well as some of the challenges and joys of being a small business owner. It was a true pleasure to head out for a walk alongside Cheyenne in the very landscape that inspires her art. Stay tuned after the episode to find out where you can pick up some Cheyenne Mallow pottery for yourself and to learn more about Girl Gotta Hike. If you're in the market for a new pack, then might I suggest you look no further than Gossamer Gear. Whether you're heading out for your first overnight in the backcountry, planning a week-long section on one of the national scenic trails, or setting yourself up for a much longer adventure, their variety of pack styles and volumes will help you carry everything you need and keep you comfortable while you're doing it. If you're newer to backpacking, there can be a lot to keep track of, and it's likely that the gear you're gathering to go inside your pack might feel a bit on the bulky side. A pack like the 60-liter Mariposa offers plenty of room for the basics, plus enough extra to carry any additional creature comforts, while still only weighing in at just over 2 pounds. If you're one who's been at it for a while, then you've likely pared down a bit. Maybe you've switched out your heavy sleeping bag for a more compressible one, or realized that you don't need to bring quite as many layers as you once thought. If that's the case, the 50-liter Gorilla might be more aligned with your new hiking style. And for anyone who's cut it way back and found that bringing only the essentials is their preferred way of making miles, then Gossamer Gear has a pack for you too. Their G420 and Kumo 36 ultralight packs offer much more durability and come in at a lower price point than some of the other ultralight offerings out there. Whatever your hiking style, Gossamer Gear has a pack to fit your needs, and they're all loaded with awesome features like large external stretchy pockets, handy hip belt pockets, and removable back pads, which not only help give their packs some structure, but double as sitting pads too. As a special treat, Girl Gotta Hike the Podcast listeners can use the code GIRLGOTTAHIKEGOSSAMER to get 15% off your first purchase at gossamergear.com. That's Girl Gotta Hike Gossamer, and you can follow the link in the show notes to find out more about all of their awesome offerings. Hey there, hikers. Planning on heading for the hills this spring? Whether your plan is to walk for 2 miles or for 20, there are some essential items you should have on hand to make your time on trail safe and enjoyable. A map is key for knowing where you are. A headlamp helps you see in the dark if you end up staying out later than intended. Sunscreen, extra layers, and first aid keep your body protected. And carrying extra food keeps you fueled for adventure. Of all the things to bring, the one that is most essential to my continued well-being is water. But weighing in at 2.2 pounds per liter, it can sometimes feel like a bummer to bring multiple bottles out on my back. Know what makes the thought of carrying it all a little easier to swallow? By bringing along some delicious drink mixes with me. Made with reverence, sustainably sourced, and minimally processed, Resilience Turmeric Elixir from Anjali's Cup tastes as good as it makes you feel. The golden drink mix with ginger and lemon mixes easily with hot or cold water, and the powder comes in individual packets that are ultra-light enough for even the most extreme of the gram-counting backpackers out there. The benefits of toting along some golden turmeric goodness far outweigh the weight. Turmeric is a powerful anti-inflammatory, and studies have shown that it helps to ease joint and muscle pain, improve flexibility, and is packed with antibacterial properties. All the things I want when I'm out on trail, or when I'm back at home after enduring a long day in the outdoors. Founder, fellow female small business owner, and outdoors enthusiast Anjali Bhargava is offering Girl Gotta Hike hikers and podcast listeners 15% off your purchase. Packets of Resilience Turmeric Elixir come in 10 and 25 count boxes, perfect for popping in your pack. And if you want even more than a mugful at your fingertips, it also comes in larger serving sizes too. When you're prepping your pack for your next adventure, consider tossing in a packet or two of Resilience Turmeric Elixir from Anjali's Cup. It's like a hug in your cup, and your taste buds will thank you too. Head over to anjaliscup.com, that's ANJALISCUP.com, and enter the code GIRLGOTAHIKE at checkout for 15% off. Definitely we should sign in.
Ooh, that one's tight.
A wooden box. That's a...
This is a newer trail.
I was going to say, they're usually metal. Welcome to the Girl Gotta Hike podcast. I'm with Cheyenne Mallow, a ceramicist and artist and local to the Catskills. But I've never been on the trail that we are hiking on right now. So Cheyenne, tell me where we are.
We are very close to the Ashokan Reservoir on something called the Ashokan Quarry Trail, which was, I think, formerly called the Yale Quarry Trail.
Okay.
It's an area where when they were originally constructing the Ashokan Reservoir, they would have quarried or mined bluestone. So what we're walking on right now is actually a rail bed that would have had train cars on it.
Yeah.
And there's some really interesting remains that we'll get to explore on the way, where you can see pieces of buildings.
Oh, cool.
And a section with these like 10-foot walls that you can walk down where the trains would have pulled through.
Cool. So how did you find this place?
A local friend. It's sort of our like sweet hidden little local spot. It's very close to where our home and studio is.
Nice.
So there's a back bushwhack way you can get in, so I could actually walk this from home.
Oh, that's very cool.
Very convenient at the end of a studio day if you just need to like get out and get a little something in there. It's got a great northwesterly view from what's sort of the summit. So we've come up for like sunset.
Oh, that's amazing. It's nice to have that right in your backyard.
Very convenient. I feel very fortunate. It's a very new trail. So as we just passed, there's a lot of like informational placards about it also.
I feel like lately there's been a lot of upkeep or new signage on a lot of the trails in the Hudson Valley and the Catskills. And I think it's really good. People obviously have... I'm a little out of breath. This is my first hike of the year. And I'm like, oh, we were going a little bit uphill, and I just realized I'm breathing heavy.
I feel like I have a friend that I hike with a lot, and whenever we start hiking, it's often this hike.
Yeah.
We're just like, realize we've been booking it for no reason.
Yeah.
And like, were you hiking fast or was I hiking fast?
I'm like, yeah, a couple weeks off trail, and I can feel it. I'm really impressed with the increase in signage. I think it's really helpful to help guide people who are maybe new to this. You want to know a little of the history. There is so much history here in the Catskills, and it sounds like you have lived near the reservoir for a while.
We've been in Olive Bridge for 3 years. We actually moved in with Zach's mom in the summer of 2019, pre-pandemic.
Ooh.
Intentionally to have a larger studio space, and it's been a really great situation for everyone. She's totally capable, but she lived in this big house all alone, so it allowed us to move in, and we're helping each other out in that way. Zach actually grew up in this area, so he's very familiar with
the history and the land use. And
but before that, I lived in Rosendale for about 8 years, so I've been in the area. When I lived there, I would bicycle to the reservoir, and now I get to live by the reservoir and bicycle other places.
Yeah. So the Ashokan Reservoir is one of the main water sources for New York City, and we are 2.5 hours north of the city. And so it is this kind of interesting area where beautiful water, but it's not necessarily for the locals.
Very controversial.
Yeah.
There's a lot of anger still about the project.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the Olive Library, which is maybe 5 miles up the road, has a small museum in the basement that talks about the Ashokan Reservoir history.
Oh, interesting.
Which is totally worth a visit if you're into that.
Yeah. What have you learned being the partner of someone who grew up here?
I think one of the more impactful elements was you learn about the history and how New York City came up. There was a land grab. A lot of people were forced out of their homes.
Mm-hmm.
And it, not having lived it, it kind of doesn't feel real because it's so long ago. But very recently, there was a power company from California that put in a proposal to build a hydroelectric dam in the Catskills. And one of the locations was 5 miles from here that they were proposing, which would have totally flooded Moon Hall Road, which is where you would park if you were going to
hike Friday.
Friday,
yeah.
So they would have, it would have essentially been a large battery. They would have pumped up water from the Shokan Reservoir, which New York City is not
active to. No.
brought it up in elevation during the night when electricity was cheaper, and they released it during the day. So it's kind of this idea of green energy because it's hydroelectric, but it would have been on forever wild lands. So this kind of felt in some ways like a similar thing to the Shokan Reservoir being built, in that there's someone from the outside coming in that wants to take your land and do something else with it. Not as large as the Shokan Reservoir, obviously, but
finding that balance of having a clean water source is really important, especially for large areas. But yeah, at what cost? And I know there's lots of movements across the country lately about releasing some of those dams and figuring out alternate ways of energy. And
which is interesting, because at the same time that they're doing that, they're trying to build more.
Right.
So
I guess nobody knows what the best path forward is.
But there is a lot of money in that. It almost feels like it's more about the money than about the energy in a way.
Interesting.
Maybe.
It's like, well, is this good? Is this bad? We're on these trails that are protected. You know, we can't build in this forever wild area. It's kind of protecting this water source, even if it wasn't actually natural, and it creates this visual landscape that people come to seek out and recreate in the area, that provides tourism money and all sorts of things. And I know, like, some of your pottery has had the Shokan Reservoir on it, and it's it is pretty. So this is an interesting balance.
Just because it has a sort of controversial history doesn't mean it's not something that you can't enjoy the natural beauty of now. Like, it's already happened.
It's true.
It's already in place.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to boycott the rail trail, you know, and I'm not going to enjoy looking at it from the top of Wittenberg when I'm up there.
Oh, one of the best views for anyone listening in all of the Catskills. Wittenberg.
Hands down.
Hands down, yeah.
There are a few peaks in the Catskills that, when you're looking down on the Shokan Reservoir, when you know that it was originally a river, you can kind of see that. Mm. You can really feel that it was a flooded river. It has that kind of contour to it.
Oh, yeah, I'll have to get back up there and see. On my way over to this trailhead, driving along the side of the reservoir to get here, I kind of forgot that it's not just this, like, round body of water.
Right.
You know, there's little inlets and little coves, and it's like, right, that's the topography of the Catskills, are these ridgelines and then these long, skinny hills down. Yeah, and it's like, oh, right, this just filled up.
And it was an impressive, massive project.
I can imagine the engineering that had to be figured out.
So this is kind of a neat spot. That sort of cliff up there, we're going to be on top of that heading the other direction. That's where the loop ends up going. There's a little tree overhanging. I have no way of pointing out which one it was. I was here one evening and there was a porcupine in it.
Very cool.
Making these really cute noises.
So we are looking at it. This had to have been a quarry wall, is my guess. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of this vernal pool, maybe, that has filled up. And right now, in January, covered with ice. Very pretty. I'm going to take a photo.
How do you feel about you being in photos?
I'm fine with being in photos. I never usually get to be in photos. Oh. I'm the one taking them.
I usually have too many photos on my phone at the end of a hike.
No such thing as a photographer. I can say that with confidence.
In the winter, when it's like actual winter, this ends up being like a really beautiful ice sheet.
This is a really cool trail. Thank you even already for showing me this.
I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Appreciating what's here, even if it is a little bit altered from what, you know, Mother Nature originally intended. But some of my favorite places in New York State were kind of cultivated during the Works Progress Administration, the Civilian Conservation Corps.
The fact that they were interested in conservation and sort of preserving these spaces for people to enjoy is so important.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the way we would do it now, but it was certainly some foresight into protection.
It kind of makes you wonder, another 50 to 100 years into the future, what we think we're doing right now, how are they going to do that? Is it going to be a similar sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, something unique about the whole Catskills and the Adirondacks, right? This idea of forever wild, it means certain things. It means not cutting down trees, and it means
not building a dam.
Not building a dam. So they got around that somehow.
But I think it's it's good to consider and think about with intention how our forests being managed. Why are they doing it that way?
Yeah.
And I think the educational element is something that's been kind of like a little bit more prominent also, like them explaining why they're doing certain practices.
Right.
If you understand why something's being done, it makes more sense.
It makes more sense. You may have a greater appreciation for it. Yeah. So this is cool. We're walking in definitely some remnants of the old quarry.
So if you use your imagination, there are these two walls on either side, right? Maybe 10 feet tall?
Yeah, at least.
So it's like just wide enough that it feels like a train could fit through that. There's sort of a fun phenomenon that happens in here. If one person stands at one end, the other stands at the other, and you talk quietly, it sounds like you're right next to them.
Oh, that's cool.
But there's also some ruins up there that we could walk to if you feel like seeing it.
Sure, let's do it.
Little bushwhack.
I didn't bring my trekking poles.
Ugh. I know, you said no bushwhack with elevation.
No bushwhacks with elevation, so we don't breathe too hard, but this is minor. In terms of like Catskills bushwhacks, we can actually kind of see the top, so. So what brought you to this area to begin with? I know you're not from New York, right?
Nope, I grew up in Wisconsin, and after college, and after an internship in Minneapolis, I moved to the Hudson Valley for a second internship at the Women's Studio Workshop, which is in Rosendale. It's a nonprofit arts organization that was founded to support women in the arts. And they do that primarily through their residency programming. They also have classes both in the summer and ongoing in the ceramics studio. And actually, I came here as a printmaking intern, not a ceramics intern.
So your history lies in printmaking.
That is the history. This is like, we can't figure this thing out, this hole.
Yeah.
It feels like it could have been like a water cistern.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not wide enough people are going through.
No.
But why would you want water there? Like, you can see where something big, like a big pole sat mm-hmm. there, and you can imagine things turning.
Well, maybe. I mean, maybe we have to take a visit to the library after this and see some old... See some old pictures of the buildings that are here.
I sort of love the mystery behind it.
Yeah.
You can really imagine a lot of...
Absolutely. These stone walls are gorgeous. So the Women's Studio Workshop has... I remember hearing about that. I went to college in New Paltz many years ago as an art major.
Very close.
Yes.
You were an art major?
Yeah.
Film?
Photography, yep. I mean, I kind of took all the basics. And ceramics I liked, but I was just... didn't understand how like dedicated you had to be. Like the ceramics, I was off campus, the ceramics building was much farther away from my house than the photo studio. And I didn't realize like, oh yeah, you gotta wet your clay, you gotta keep that wet. And
I can't imagine not having a home studio.
It was tough. I mean, I think by the end of the semester I finally like kind of got the hang of it, but it was too late.
The great thing about ceramic right now in time is that it's kind of become like a really cool thing. Ceramics is kind of hot right now. So, which means that there are a lot of community studios that have popped up, which offer generally a lot of adult classes. Mm. So you could take a 4-week adult class in hand building or throwing or some different element of it and just like try it out again.
Yeah. So what drew you to it? Was it being, is ceramics one of the main disciplines at the Women's Studio Workshop?
I would call it maybe a secondary discipline.
Okay.
Like they're known locally more for their ceramics because of their annual Chili Bowl fundraiser.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
Have you gone?
I went once and bought a mug from you. I don't know if you remember.
That would have been a long time ago.
Well, no, but it was not when I was at school at New Paltz. It was like, I don't know, six years ago or something.
Yeah, that's when I was around a lot.
Yeah, I had the history of me knowing about your mugs with topographic maps on it is I was in Woodstock one summer and went to the Birdcliff gift shop artisan store, and I was drawn to, you know, I like maps, I always have, I like hiking, obviously. And so I saw your display and I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. And then the first one I picked up, it was the Devil's Path. And I was like, oh my God, I've hiked the Devil's Path. This is so cool. I have to get one. And then
I don't know if it was,
I don't know if it was later that year or maybe the next year. I guess I had followed your Instagram or your Etsy or something and saw that you were going to be at this chili bowl sale. And I was like, oh, my dad has also hiked the Devil's Path. I need to get him one. I had heard about the Devil's Path for a long time, but I didn't hike it until after I had finished the AT. I was looking for a trip that I could do that was more than a night.
Yeah.
You know, I made it into like a 3-day trip and I wanted to check off a number of peaks at once. So
that's the only way I think I wouldn't do it is with a full pack.
Yeah, well,
that's like, I really respect that.
I think if you spread it out over a few days, it's less daunting, but it's still very, very difficult set of five to seven mountains if you add in Hunter and Southwest Hunter.
I've done it twice in one day and a third time over 2 days.
Wait, oh, you didn't like...
So in 2020 we hiked it in a day. In 2013 we hiked it in a day.
In a day.
And a year or two before that we did it as a 2-day, but we drove home and back.
Oh yeah.
In between the sections.
Oh, that's,
so yeah. It's still a Saturday, Sunday.
You had like a night in your bed.
Yes. Which... That was kind of a bizarre... That was the first time we hiked the DP.
Mm-hmm.
And we did it in the most backwards way you possibly could. We did the eastern section first.
Okay.
But we did it west to east.
Okay.
And then we did the western section the second day and also did it west to east.
Interesting.
But it was sort of fun because there was a group through hiking it.
Mm-hmm.
And we passed them both days.
Oh, right. Because
they camped. They actually carried their stuff.
Yeah, the Devil's Path, for anyone that doesn't know, is 25-mile point-to-point trail here in the Catskills that goes over 3,500-foot peaks. And then you have, like, some side trail options to get some more. And it is hard.
It's no joke.
It is named the Devil's Path for a reason. Lots of elevation gain and loss between each of those peaks. Rocky terrain.
And they are aggressive.
Yeah.
It's sort of split. It was the eastern half and the western half. In the eastern half, you've got four peaks. So you go over Indian Head Twin, Sugarloaf Plateau.
Mm-hmm.
And then you drop all the way down to 214.
And that's a big drop.
Bail option. And then the second half has Hunter and Westkill on it.
Yep.
And it also has this thing called St. Anne's.
Which is like a sleeper mountain.
It's basically another, yeah.
It's like 3450 or, you know, it's something right in the same range, but doesn't quite count
but
as a 3,500
like
foot peak. Yes, especially at the end of a long day already. So it is kind of one of those bucket list things a lot of people have around here. And
there are
definitely all sorts of challenges, devil in a day. But there are, you can break it up. You can do one mountain at a time for the most part, or you can do two at a time, park a car on either end, different access points. And that kind of, you know, shaves off the toughness just a little bit. I mean, it's still tough. You still have a long day out there, but it's not quite as daunting.
It's not a 15-hour day.
I had a hike out there this summer. We saw a trail runner who was doing a double Devil's Path.
What? That's incredible, because that would be 50 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's like 9,000 feet of elevation gain.
Insane. Absolutely insane. But it always surprises me. I mean, I don't really have a desire to do it in a day. I mean, maybe just to try.
It's a long day. We've never done it and seen Westkill in the daylight. In 2020 when we did it, we hiked the last 9 miles in the dark.
Oh yeah. And a lot of people attempt this in the summer when you do have really long daylight. Yeah. Well, this is cool. Now we're atop this quarry we were below before.
We're gonna hit First View.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of neat. It's like this big rocky space, and then there's a really nice place off and have tea with a
better
view a little farther down.
Sounds great. Yeah, so you were talking about this being in your backyard and as a good, you know, end of the day after a long studio day, place to hit the trails. So tell me what is a normal studio day like for you?
So since we moved to Olive Bridge, we being my partner Zach and I, who have been together for 8 years, so we're basically married. He's also my romantic partner, but studio partner as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's both of us running our business. It's an interesting kind of dynamic to try to explain, because I designed and created what the body of work is and what the line is.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started working with me full time.
It is your name.
Mm-hmm.
So you started it before working with Zach. How did your partnership in terms of the studio work come about?
So I had been designing and developing this line since 2013, and they looked awful actually at the beginning. They've really changed and developed this body of work to where they are now. But I had been designing and developing it, and it was at a point where it pretty much looks like it does now. I had been doing events like craft fairs and that kind of thing since 2016, I want to say. I think that's when I officially made a DBA. Zach had been working in a garden center in 2018 when we were living together in Rosendale, and he had winter sort of off, and it was the holidays, 2018, so I was really busy.
Oh yeah.
And I sort of like, hey, do you want to try making these ornaments with me? And that, over the course of not too long, turned into him working full-time with me, and then transitioning pretty organically and nicely into both of us running and managing the business together. And I really couldn't do this without him anymore. And I think it's really been my dream to do this as a partnership. Mm-hmm. And not just by myself. Running a business is a lot of work. And that's like one of the holes I think that academia and arts programs have, is the lack of education in the business element of being an artist. Because when you're an artist, you really are running a small business. The small business happens to be oftentimes you, but that means you still have to do your taxes and allocate your expenses and do all of your own marketing and your business planning. And usually academic arts programs focus very heavily on teaching the craft and teaching you how to make the work, but not about how to successfully find a living doing that and the different ways that can look.
And so how do you think that you learned that?
Luckily, the ceramics and arts community is very supportive. Like, a lot of it was these different types of communities that you find within the arts. So through Women's Studio and through the ceramics community, that's a group that has a certain amount of experience that can help and cultivate one another. But then when you start doing the markets or craft fairs, that's a whole other maker community that is also really supportive, has a lot of experience. And you often make market friends that end up becoming real friends in the end. Or people who are participating in the same markets, who've had a lot of experience in an area, figuring out which ones are the ones that are a good fit for your work. And through building those relationships, you're able to help one another and really figure it out. So a lot of it is just figuring it out, because there is no real like educational program for that.
Yeah, it's an entrepreneurship model that, yeah, is agreed, sorely lacking when it comes to arts programs. And
yes. Have you heard of SCORE?
I have heard of SCORE, yeah.
For the listeners, since you know about it.
Only a little bit. I only know a little bit.
So it's this organization that, it's a supportive business organization where they will pair you as a small business owner with a business mentor. Mm-hmm. You don't have to own a business. You could be thinking about starting a business, but essentially they'll help you find someone that can help guide you through that process, maybe writing a business plan or whatever element of it you're into at the time. And they also do free, just about weekly webinars.
Oh, nice.
On a lot of different business topics, which could be from marketing to taxes to you name it. And they're geared towards people in different stages of their career and development. So we'll often, we sign up for a lot of these.
Nice.
And we put them on in the studio as sort of background. And we've learned so much information from that about marketing trends, different platforms, different ways of thinking about your work and how it relates to people that might be buying it.
And that's amazing, because it's not necessarily catered to artists, but you can take those concepts and apply it to your creative work as well.
Exactly. And it's all free. Definitely a good
resource. Which is amazing.
Resource.
Yeah, that's invaluable. You mentioned marketing. What are some of the biggest takeaways from some of that SCORE seminars?
So when you're thinking about marketing your work to someone, it's a story, and there's a hero in the story. But the hero in the story is not the person making the work, it's the person who is discovering your work. And they're finding the way that your work is going to connect to them. So when you're marketing your work in the world, it really, someone is discovering you, is like a way to think about it.
Or what are some of the areas where you have followed through with that?
In some ways, with our Instagram specifically, we'll post a lot of process videos and information as a way for people to discover how the work is made. Not so much showing them a beautiful picture of a mug, but also how that piece is made.
Yeah.
and sort of engaging them in the process in that way so they can kind of feel involved.
And not to interrupt, but I'm going to.
Please do.
I know what your line of work looks like, but why don't we tell other people what your line of work looks like?
So we create functional pottery, meaning like mugs, cups, bowls, but also handmade tile that features topographic maps of things like hiking trails and mountains and sections of the Hudson River. So I kind of think of it like places you would have an adventure.
Oh, nice. I like that.
So the aesthetic is, for the most part, a white body to the piece, like a white mug, and the topographic lines are drawn in black. And if there's a trail, that'll be like a red dot pattern.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a very good description.
Thank you. An added element is that in order to get what the lines are made of and the dots are made of, it's this process called slip trailing. So if you take clay and you add a bunch of water to it, it becomes more liquefied. Like, think of like icing a cake. So when you've got that paint quality consistency, you can add colorants to it, like black for the lines or red for the dot. And then you put that into a squeeze bottle and you can draw on top of your pot with that.
Nice.
And because it's clay, it stays raised up. So the topographic lines and the dots have like a tactile quality to them, so you can feel the pot.
Definitely. This is a cool viewpoint. What are we looking at?
There's a better one. That'll be
better one. Just a little farther.
Okay. Yep.
All right. Well, wait.
But if you want to look, we could totally look because we're here.
I mean, I'm sure I know these mountains, but I don't normally see them from this angle. So
we were just talking about one of them.
Excellent.
A minute ago.
Well, I'm excited for the more open view.
It's kind of funny because we're so close to the reservoir, mm-hmm. but you don't get to see it at all on the site.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, you can see it from the parking lot. And so this focusing on functional pottery and the topographic maps, how did that come about?
Partially, I always loved math.
Mm-hmm.
Like when we were kids growing up in Wisconsin, my sister and I would make like Peter Pan style maps of like hunting for treasure in the yard.
Nice.
And it's just the aesthetic of maps. I always thought was really beautiful. And in my print work, I'd use it to add more of like a structure to like an ambiguous background. And then when I moved to the Hudson Valley, I became more invested in ceramics. The ceramics community at Women's Studio was just what I needed at that time. And that was about the same time I started hiking the Catskills. And it's just like, what if I put this hike I went on my pot?
Yeah. Well, I think it works. And we have now reached this viewpoint, and this is a better place to look.
This would be a good tea spot.
All right. Should we do it? Should we have some tea?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to guess at what some of these are?
Or... Yeah. Yeah. So we are looking at left to right. I mean, I'm sure, do you know them? You know them. Yeah. You come here all the time. I'm like, I can pull out my peak finder or I can pull out my topographic map.
Peak finder
is such a good, a fellow guide told me about it and I was like, oh, this
genius.
Is awesome. This is genius.
It's fun because you can guess and then you can see if you're right.
Yeah. So knowing that, let's see, the reservoir is kind of at our right.
Yeah.
To the below. All right, I'm going to try and guess this to start. And that is going south. That's north. That's what's
it's
here.
It's not a 3500.
It's not.
It has
okay.
a trail.
Okay.
And a plane crash.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, okay. Is that a Shokan High Point?
Yes.
Okay, so I've not done a Shokan High Point, but that would make sense understanding where we are.
Okay, so you can see like the main top section.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the trail takes you. From there, the next bump down, there's a bushwhack hike you could take to that. Incredible view and blueberries.
Yes. Gotta know all the blueberry spots. So if that's there, okay, I kind of know where that is in relation to the other ones. I mean, over there has got to be, is that Wittenberg, Cornell, and Slide? Or is that one of them?
Wittenberg, Cornell, Friday. Because Slide would peak up.
Right.
That behind.
Behind. Oh, how cool.
You got the Burroughs Range there.
Right there.
So what we were talking about, the view of the reservoir from Wittenberg.
From Wittenberg.
You can see it from here, which is just fun.
Oh, that's very cool.
So
that's interesting because Friday is not... Right, because that would make a curve around. And then Balsam Cap must be hidden behind whatever this little rise is.
That's South Mountain with the tower.
Okay. Do you know what that's...
Which is also a fun... bushwhack. We've done it from both sides.
Awesome.
Gone up the ridge to Ashokan High Point. Oh, I brought one too.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
The butt pad. Winter hiking.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to sit on these cold rocks on your own. Yeah, bushwhacking is very draining, you know, when you're really on no trail. You know, a lot of the bushwhack hikes around here, the more popular ones, have ended up with some herd paths, if you can find them, you know, if the leaves aren't too full.
I feel like when you're on a trail, the trail goes up in kind of a smart way. Like it's following the ridgeline and it's following along like an even topographic section. And when you're bushwhacking, you often just kind of go straight up.
Mm-hmm. What is the fastest way to the top? Yeah, it is interesting to learn how trails were laid out. And a lot of them around here where they've placed shelters and lean-tos are where there are natural springs. So you're kind of bringing people to the place that, well, I don't know if it's the easiest way up around here, but
there is no easy way
there's
up.
There's no easy way up.
But it's always worth it.
Absolutely, yeah. I know a lot of the trails, some of them anyway, were adopted from old logging roads or tan barking roads, and they were adopted from bluestone quarrying and stuff like that. So in those cases, it probably was the fastest way up. What's the best, fastest way to the natural resources? Let's get this in and out. In other ways, yeah, it does follow a contour. Occasionally takes a gentler way up. I know that it's a new trail in the Catskills if there are a lot of switchback. Like, what is that one? Romer Mountain?
Romer.
Yeah.
So that, good.
I'm like, there's actually bush, you know, switchbacks on this. This is a new trail.
And stairs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very impressed with some of the trail infrastructure that's up in the Catskills. The sheer size of some of those boulders that they move to become stairs, it's impressive. And very tasteful, I feel like, too. Like, it's stairs, but it doesn't really detract from the scenery. You still feel like you're in the woods.
Utilizing the natural resources around you to make those stairs, yeah. Well, we are enjoying some delicious tea and I out of your amazing mugs, and I looked on the bottom and this one is Minnewaska, which is near and dear to my heart. I worked at the state park when I was in college.
Did you?
I did. And still know some folks that work there, including the park manager.
My equivalent to that was the end of my college career. I worked at a ski area in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Where I went to school is right on the border of Minnesota, Wisconsin.
Are there a lot of ski mountains? It seems kind of flat over there.
Depends on which part of the state you're in. Okay. I wouldn't call them mountains.
Bunny slopes, maybe.
Bunny slopes. You can take your snowboard on a lot of ice.
Nice.
In the Midwest. Actually, northern Wisconsin and Minnesota has some pretty decent ski areas.
Mm-hmm.
But sort of like better than nothing. You're still enjoying the outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the atmosphere.
Absolutely. Did you do a lot of outdoors pursuits when you were young?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Yeah. I have really fond memories of coming home from school, middle school, high school, my dad like forcing us to put the snowshoes on and going out into the woods across the road. Like, it's cold, but then just loving it.
Nice.
Once we were out there. So I have brought those back on the last trip home. They were traditional style, like when I was 10, like little snowshoes.
Wow.
We were pretty young too.
Did you live where you were surrounded with a lot of trees?
No, we were in a rural central Wisconsin.
Okay.
A town of like 13 to 1600, 8 miles out of town.
Okay.
So the nearest neighbors were really like cows. There'd be cows in the field between us, and you could see a mile across the field, and there was a barn, right? It's all barns and farms. Would you like a refill?
Sure, thank you. Do you also have Minnewaska today, or do you have something else?
This is Overlook.
Oh, nice.
And the color, this is an exclusive thing we did for Food 52.
Oh, fun. Food 52 is a huge food blog and website and...
They have the best recipes.
They have the best. How did that come about?
So Food 52 does this holiday mugs project every year. I want to say this is maybe the fifth year. It's like a newer project that they've been doing. And an artist that had participated before, Kim from Fisheye Ceramics up in Catskill, recommended us.
Oh, cool.
After you participate in it, there's like the survey at the end. It's like, who else would you recommend for this?
So awesome.
She recommended us, and Food 52, I guess, liked our work and reached out and asked if we'd be interested in participating. So yes. So we do a limited edition for them for that project. So this last year we made 50 mugs that had a map of Overlook Mountain on it, which is something that's normally in our line, but we did an exclusive interior color.
Oh, cool.
That only gets used periwinkle. But it was really neat because not this year, but the year before that, they decided to do studio visits with five of their artists that were participating. And we were one of the locations that they came to. So we got to meet some of the people
That's
that were
awesome.
Running this project. And they were just so lovely in person and just so fun and so nice. It was just like great to make that connection because Food 52 is a really big big company.
Big brand,
so
big name.
So they made it very personal and they were real. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, they've
that's
been really great fun. To work with.
And you have your own business. You sell off your fares and through your website and you do these occasional collaborations. But interested in who reaches out to do these custom pieces?
A lot of people reach out about custom work. Some of them are people that will meet at an in-person event that will see our work and then ask about a specific location, like maybe somewhere that they visited that we don't represent, or a lot of people who like get engaged or have like special like significant other hikes that they've done. We have a custom fee that's a base fee for designing a new map, and then whatever the form is what that cost is on top of it. But sometimes we'll just get emails from people, or people will reach out on Etsy mm-hmm. asking about that. So we can do this on a somewhat limited basis, and it really depends on what the map looks like. Long Island. And we've gotten a lot of requests for Long Island, and we just can't make that look good. It just, every map that Zach has tried to redesign, it just never works.
Aww.
So we're learning the limitations of what our work, what translates well.
Yeah.
Within this particular style.
Yeah.
So usually things like mountains work well. We can almost always do a mountain.
Yeah, I guess there isn't a lot of topographic change on Long Island.
No.
So that would be, I could see how that would be hard.
It's sort of like a line and then a bunch of blue.
Yeah.
Which
maybe you could get into like, I'm not making suggestions for ocean depths. There's a lot of coastline.
Bathymetric.
Yeah.
We did that for Lake Tahoe, actually.
Oh, really?
As a form, it's not terribly exciting. Can't do.
It's too hard. Yeah.
We've mostly been able to accommodate all of the locations that people have asked about.
That's really cool.
And that's something that actually Zach has taken on a lot of since he started, is designing the maps for the custom request, which has been great.
Yeah. To be able to accommodate that within your regular workflow, it's got to be fun, a little something different, but also like kind of the same thing. Even if it's a different place, it's everyone has that same sense of love for a place, and
yeah.
Obviously that's why they're finding you, because they can tell you feel that way too.
Something I really appreciate when people, oftentimes when they reach out with custom requests, they'll tell a little story about why that place is important or significant to them.
Oh, cool.
And I love that they feel comfortable enough to do that, like mm-hmm. to tell us that this is special and why, and that just makes it so much deeper than here's a location, let's make the piece, here's a location, let's make the piece. Like, oh, this is important for this reason, and we're connecting on this other way.
That's awesome.
My dad was really important figuring, not just appreciate the outdoors, but like spend time in them, like do sports in them.
Mm-hmm.
He's really big on into road cycling.
Nice.
Which ended up getting me into road cycling, so I do a lot of that now.
Cycling around here is beautiful. I have once, years and years ago, I think, did like circled the whole reservoir or a good amount of it. That is some hills.
That is
some hills to deal with, for sure.
There's some really great loops. We have the morning or the normal route that we do. That's 13 miles. That'll be like before work or after work kind of thing. And that, wish I can remember the elevation gauge, but that one's not quite as like, there's hills, but it's not going to kill you. And there's an amazing loop. The short version of it, I want to say it's like 38 miles, but you can make it as long as you want. That goes from our house. You can go up Peekamoose Road or Watson Hollow and then loop around to 46 or 47. You can like hit the Rondout Reservoir. So it's like cycling from the Ashogun to the
Rondout. The other one. Nice.
And then come back and there's a logging road you can hit that is the upper parking area for Renoir Hill Falls.
Oh,
so
uh-huh.
It's very rough coming down. Like
yeah.
You don't want super skinny tires
no.
on that. But it's like a 5 mile stretch where you're cycling through the woods.
That's
and
cool.
Maybe you'll see a horse or like the occasional big truck. That's all that you can take up there. But it's just a beautiful route.
Oh, that sounds
awesome.
And then
looping back, there's a spring you can hit at the bottom of Upper Cherrytown so you can refill your water. It's just like amazing riding.
That sounds awesome. You've mentioned a little bit about doing that before work or after work or coming for a hike after work. So is like movement in nature integral to your ceramics practice? What does a day in, you know, the Cheyenne Mallow studio look like?
I totally derailed that one. I don't even know.
No, I think I asked you something else. So,
so my partner and I also play Ultimate Frisbee. in the summer. We're on this traveling club team.
Fun.
So we've started preseason training for that, which is so nerdy. So we're doing weightlifting. I'm usually doing that in the morning. I really like to get exercise in the morning. It like starts my day in a really nice way. So I've been weightlifting in the morning 3 days a week. The days that I'm not weightlifting, I'll do like a little yoga or a ride on my indoor trainer bicycle.
It's a little cold to ride outside in this wind. Yeah. Yes. Hiking, fine. Biking, I don't know. You're going faster. That wind just cuts through the layers. Yeah.
I got these little, they're called booties for cycling when it's kind of cold and they go over top of your shoes. But I haven't gotten to the point where it's cold enough that I'm still willing to go out but put them on. So I haven't used them yet. It'll happen. The day will happen. So I usually wake up before Zach does in the morning. So I'll do my whatever the exercise routine is. And well, I'll first breakfast, do the exercise routine, and then second breakfast.
Of course. Burn calories.
Right? So usually around 9, I'm starting to make second breakfast. It will have our daily planning meeting while we're having breakfast. I'll start doing some admin. And usually we're doing some kind of admin planning from our breakfast at 9 till lunch, which is like 11:30 or noon. And then after that point, we finally finish all that and we can actually get into the studio and start making work. If we're really on like the busy season schedule, what often happens is I'll be throwing on Mondays, trimming on Tuesdays, putting handles on things and doing other finishing parts to pieces on Wednesday, and then Thursday and Friday we're ideally applying the maps to the work before it gets put into the first firing, which is the bisque firing. That's an ideal, like we've made enough work that we can manage that every day.
Yeah.
So it often bleeds into like Monday's throwing will bleed into Tuesday, and sometimes it turns into a 2-week process instead of a 1-week process, but that's sort of something that we often shoot for. So little things that happen within there, like Zach is, so the way that we put the maps on our pots, we design the map on a piece of plastic.
Okay.
Like a thin sheet using a Sharpie, and then that's a reusable thing, so that we don't have to redesign it every single time. So that piece of plastic gets placed onto, say, a mug form, and then Zach will trace that onto the leather hard pot. So leather hard is where the piece kind of feels like cheddar cheese, a little soft yet.
Okay.
From Wisconsin, I have to relate.
You have to relate
cheese.
To cheese. That makes sense. And cheddar, of course.
Everyone like, knows cheddar.
Like cheddar from Wisconsin. Yeah.
It's soft, but it'll like. Yeah.
It's but a little kind, valuable. A little firm.
Still fragile. Quite fragile. So using that pencil, Zach will incise trail map onto the pot and then take the plastic off. And then we print, as you saw on the bottom, there's a label that has our studio name and what the location of the trail is. So that is applied to silkscreen transfer. So we'll print that on a piece of newsprint and then transfer that kind of like a temporary tattoo.
Okay.
Onto the bottom with leather
hard. Cool. These are good descriptions. I like it. Yeah.
Thank you. And from that point, I'll take over to do the slip trailing of the design onto the pot.
The raised,
The raised topographic lines and the dots. And then it can sit out. The pot can go onto the shelves and dry naturally for a couple of days before it goes into the kiln. Okay. If we're in the holidays, we'll put a fan on it overnight and you can get things to dry out pretty quickly if it's not too humid. You can kind of rush it a little. So there are different types of kilns that you could fire your work in. We fire in an electric kiln, so it runs off of electricity.
It's pretty consistent heat then. You know what you're getting in an electric kiln? Okay.
And there's different types of electric kilns also. So ours has a computer on it.
Oh, cool.
Computerized electric kiln. So we can input in that computer exactly how we want it to fire.
Oh.
So we'll go up 100 degrees an hour to get to 212 degrees. And if it's a bisque that's boiling, we'll stay there for 4 to 8 hours. And you tell the computer and it just does
it. It just keeps it at temp. Yeah.
So the bisque firing goes up to 1845 degrees. And the glaze, our glaze, it's a what's called cone sick, which goes up to 2245.
Wow, it's pretty hot.
Yeah.
So you have to do the bisque firing prior to the glaze, right? Because you have to dry it all out and then you add more.
Yes.
Essentially.
So the bisque, it's kind of like it's halfway fired. So after the bisque, it's like pretty hard. It's like safe to touch and move around and handle a little bit more aggressively. but it's still pretty porous. So that's a stage that you would then glaze your pot at. So
that's just kind of like a sealant in a way, right?
Yeah. Or like a glaze is sort of like glass. Like there's a lot of silicate in it. So you're almost putting a coating of glass on your ceramic piece.
I like that description. That makes a lot of sense. And it is like a little bit shiny. Yeah.
With the shininess is a factor of that glaze specifically. Mm-hmm. You can develop and create glazes that are totally matte or super glossy or somewhere in between. Mm-hmm. But this aesthetic, I really like that little bit of like sparkle.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. You know, glass and ceramic are kind of made of some of the same materials. But
there's a lot of like hidden things that unless you're a ceramic artist, you also like wouldn't know that it's a step in the work also. So like after this comes out of the bisque kiln, that first firing, we'll spend hours sanding that kiln load of work. So where these raised lines come up over the lip, all of those get sanded down so they're a little less obtrusive. So when you're drinking, that could be like...
Yeah, there's a little texture to it, but it's not like jagged or it's not intrusive. Yeah.
That's mostly Zach spending hours sanding.
Has he ever gone too far and sanded it all off and you have to start again? Or can you start again?
It depends. Like sometimes when we're sanding, you'll like chip a little piece off. And if it's a little enough section, you can actually re-slip trail that little bit, and then the glaze will keep it on.
Oh, good.
But there are also, occasionally, like, you'll go down maybe a little too far, but we sort of embrace that as the piece being handmade and it showing that this is an actual person that made this and not a machine.
Yeah, I think that's what's really interesting about all of these. You can definitely, I don't know if you can make ceramics by machine, I assume you can.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I assume
most of like what you'd buy at Target
is all just machine made.
Yeah. There are humans like involved in the process of running machines, but there's so much more life to something that a real person has made that is choosing to make that than someone in a factory somewhere who is just it's just a job.
Right.
And they have no voice in the creativity behind the work.
Yeah, it feels like you're getting something individual and unique and special.
And maybe you hiked it.
Or you worked at Minnewaska when you were in college. You have some connection to the place. Yeah.
My like sort of secret conspiracy theory behind it all is this idea that I want people to really like respect and protect nature. Mm-hmm. And if they have like a daily reminder of this great experience that they had in a natural place, they'll be a little bit more connected to it and want to protect it.
I think that's nice, subtle infiltration into people's minds. No, I think
that's
you're
a dark
right.
Side behind your
if that's your dark side, I think it's pretty light. I think it's pretty good message. Yeah, I like that. I mean, I feel like that, and obviously nature inspires you, and so you're giving that to someone else. I think anyone who's going to buy a trinket. This I'm not relating these to trinkets by any means.
It could be, sure.
But I mean, like anyone who you go somewhere on a vacation and you want to bring a little piece of that home with you, right? And so that is why people wear shirts that say Catskills. You know, it's sort of like you experience something in this place and you want to share it and you want to remember it. And so that need that, I think that's a natural thing to like want to bring that home. Why do you take a photograph? You know, why do you, people paint landscape scenery? You want to bring that home and share that. And this being the Catskills and having this history of conservation and this history of art, it's really kind of unique place. You said you were at the Women's Studio Workshop. There are all of these kind of residency programs around here, like Birdcliff and Woodstock and other places that I don't know a lot of the history about, but they've been around for a long time. So do you know a little more about kind of the history of that idea of residency and specifically to the Catskills or in art making in general?
It's really hard to be an artist and make fine art. I think a lot of the challenge is that the equipment that you would need to be a printmaker, maybe a potter, maybe a paper maker, that kind of equipment really not everyone can afford to have or has a space in their own home to be able to have all of that. And having an organization like Women's Studio Workshop that has a printmaking and papermaking and book arts and ceramic facility all in one. It means that an artist can come in and be able to work in all of those studios and use that equipment that would be cost prohibitive in their normal life. And it really allows them to make a different kind of art than they would and like realize their true vision by having access to those facilities and the funding from the organization to do that and to be able to get oftentimes paid to come in and use a facility or be provided housing.
Yeah.
It just really...
It makes it possible.
Yeah. It enables the artist and enables the art movement. A painter, I won't say easily paint in their home studio, but the materials that you need are very different from printmaker who needs a huge press. Yeah. We're back at the
view. We're back at the view. Round two. I don't know that I got a picture without us in it, so that is
good
what
thing
I...
we did it again.
Yeah. Definitely coming back here in the future.
Oh, good. There's another kind of interesting thing that we learned watching the webinar on websites. Like, can you guess what the most clicked on average, the most clicked on element of your website is?
I don't... About?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, cool. Most people check out the About page. Like, people now are really interested in aligning their personal values with how they're shopping.
Mm-hmm.
Or like choosing places to shop that align with their personal values.
I
so
think
they're interested in like who you are as a person, which also applies as an artist. Like oftentimes it's just as much about who's making the work as what the work is.
I think so. And especially with your work so clearly being handmade and feeling personal. And I mean, I wanted to know what drew you to doing this, which is why we're on this walk. But I think in that small snippet way, it's like, yeah, who is this person? I like their stuff. What else do they like? What else do we have in common together? And so did you then put a little more effort, or did that kind of just help feed the whole of the marketing idea? Like you said, you're doing a little more process, the behind the scenes, who you are, right?
It helps give it a little bit of direction.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes watching those is just affirming this idea that you already had, like this might be interesting, but there's also data to back up that this is a valuable place to be putting your energy. But part of it too is I'm really interested in learning how things are made.
Yeah.
So if that's what I want to see in someone else's work, that's what I want to share. And it's really fun to get to have those conversations too. It really opens up the dialogue in a way where we'll go to an in-person event. And I love when people ask us questions how our work is made.
Nice.
Or maybe they just started taking their first ceramics course. It's something they've always wanted to do and they're sharing some of their story.
Mm-hmm.
So a combination of that, and because we're putting hiking maps on our work, we'll often get to talk to people about hiking. So it's like a win-win.
Have you ever gone to a place based on someone's recommendation who's come to a fair and seen your work?
You know, we haven't gotten into the Adirondacks yet, but we need to, because so many people have talked it up so much.
Nice.
That's on the dream list.
Yeah.
So it's like some of the maps that we've done on our work are places that we have been.
Mm-hmm.
If it's in the Catskills, I've hiked it.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's a lot of places that are either national parks that we represent or in the Adirondack that I haven't been to yet. And those are like the wish list.
So are those works, if you're doing something where you haven't been, more of a commission based, or just we know we'd like this place, or we like the map, we like what we've seen? How do you make those decisions about what to represent?
It's a little bit of both. Partially, we are a business, so what we make ends up having to support us.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the reason that we'll choose to make something will be because it looks like a popular trail. It looks like a good trail.
Mm-hmm.
It has to look good on a mug. Like, the map has to be interesting enough. So a little bit of it is, All Trails says a lot of people hike this. Okay, look at the map, see what it looks like. Is it a place that looks interesting to do? Like, we've done a map of Marcy, right? The highest peak.
In New York State.
New York State. And it happens to look cool on a mug.
Well, you'll definitely, it is cool in person. I've only been there once so far, but you won't regret that. Are there any places that you really want to make a map of that you haven't yet?
Oh, there are a lot of places that I'd like to hike.
When you're thinking about adventuring, are you also now always thinking about maps? Or can you go on an adventure without it having to be like a good map necessarily?
Oh, I can definitely take adventures and not have it have to be a map.
That's good.
Yeah. Also, we print a label on the bottom of our pieces, that silkscreen transfer that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
And we have about, I want to say 150 of those individual decals, so individual locations that we can put on maps that have like that punchy text decal. If it's a custom piece, we'll print a blank decal and handwrite in it, which is a lot of work. But if we usually design one silkscreen per year around this time of the year, that'll have up to 24 different locations. Hmm. So doing a new location sort of has to be a little premeditated.
Yeah.
So we need to know around this time of the year what those 24 locations are gonna be, and that's it for the next year.
Okay.
But
and do those tend to be some of the same trails? Are there the more popular trails, or are they different with each season? And then lastly, are there any you've retired?
Oh. I don't think we've officially retired anything. Mm-hmm. Occasionally we'll redo a label.
Okay.
So what did we have? We had a different label for the Burroughs Range before, and now I forget how we've changed it, but it's something that's more applicable and maybe has the names of the specific peaks on it. There are labels that we've never actually used. Like we did, I don't know if it's really a thing, but we did the six.
Oh, right.
So like Peekaboo's Table and then the four Bushwhacks.
Yeah. So it's four mountains that are kind of in like a U shape in terms of the topography, where you kind of walk a ridgeline between all of them, but
yeah,
going between a few of them is really difficult, and it is one of these challenges. Have you done the six?
We did the six, but we haven't done the nine. And the nine is like, I think more people know of it. It's like a bigger challenge. That's where you get Slag Curtle, Wittenberg, and then the four Bushwhacks, and then Peekaboo's Table.
Oh, so that's almost like a completing a circle.
That's a big loop. Ooh. That is a big day.
I have heard of these, but I have never done them. I mean, I know where they all are. I've done all but one peak of them, but...
Balsam Cap. Have you been to the plane crash between Friday and Balsam Cap?
No.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
I think maybe we can go do that sometime.
I would love that.
Excellent.
I think it's the biggest plane crash in the Catskills.
Oh, wow.
There are large chunks of the engine that are larger than I am.
Oh, that's...
I'm only 5'3", so that's so
that's
much.
Really big. But yeah, I've seen a few. I've seen the Catterskill High Peak and Stopple Point or Stopple Point.
I haven't done the Catterskill one yet.
Yeah.
Stopple's cool because it's right off the trail. It's so intact.
Right there. Yeah. A lot of the full body of the plane is still there. And I know there's more. Well, that is an interesting challenge. You could do a plane crash challenge. I don't know. Maybe not.
There's a
but
lot.
I've seen you have the Fire Tower series as well.
We actually designed special labels for the Catskill Visitor Center to do the Fire Tower challenge.
Yes.
And it just hasn't quite lined up where we can make those pieces yet.
Yeah. Well, I hope to see that coming because I know that that's been a way to introduce a lot of people to the Catskills where you don't always get a view. And I think a lot of Catskills visitors are New York City based, and they're coming driving for a few hours and they want some bang for their buck, you know? It's like, but you're not always above tree line, that the fire towers offer that like entry point, I think, into the love of the greater Catskills.
And the views are incredible from all of them.
Yeah, I still have a few of those to do myself, so I'm excited to get that challenge done. But I also love that the Visitor Center now has one on the Visitor Center property, because some of these are a challenge to get to unto themselves, and this leaves it more accessible for...
Very accessible.
All skill levels of hiker. We are very close to the parking lot. I don't know if that horn was heard on our microphones. Is there anything about your process, your art, the Catskills that we haven't talked about yet that you would like to mention? And if not, just let people know where they can reach out to.
Nothing comes to mind. I'm sure we could talk about art in the Catskills all day.
All day. Because
say we do have a website, cheyennemelo.com. I think our Instagram is the most exciting way to engage with us because we do post a lot of process information on there, how things are made, and
lifestyle
stuff also.
Yeah, let people know about where you're going to be and the upcoming shows. And you have a newsletter too, is that right?
Yes. it's an infrequent newsletter, and we send out occasional mailings when we do events, which you can DM us on Instagram, email us, which you can get through our website.
Perfect.
And we can add you if you're interested to that. Most of our events are local to the Hudson Valley, but we do also have online sales through our Etsy shop.
Mm-hmm.
So we can ship anywhere to the contiguous 48 within the United States, not Alaska, Hawaii.
I will share links to all of that in the show notes. Where's your next adventure?
My partner and I are considering doing a winter DP. So we're training for that. So we'll probably do some
That's
longer.
The devil's path.
Yes, DP yes. is the devil's
we
path.
We might have said it before.
But. Winter DP. So I think between now and when that potentially happens, maybe it won't happen, we're going to try to do some longer day hikes. Do the Blackhead Range or do the Burroughs Range. Up.
Yeah. Get yourselves warmed up. Awesome. Well, that sounds really exciting, and I can't wait to see it along the way.
We'll definitely post when we do those Monks on Mountains.
I don't know, unless there's
really
anything else.
Fun.
This has been really fun.
I really enjoyed this.
Yes, I was so excited to get to learn a little more about you and also go for a hike. Thank you so much for showing me this little slice of the Catskills that I have not.
Cheyenne Mallow, thank you so much for introducing me to a new trail and for sharing so much of your artistic process with Girl Gotta Hike along the way. I walked away from our hike not only happy to know that there are some lovely lower elevation hikes in the Catskills, but also inspired by your dedication to your craft, as well as to your self-care. It seems you've slipped into that sweet spot of work and play, balancing out the business of business with activities that recharge you, like hiking, cycling, and playing Ultimate Frisbee. As a fellow creative and entrepreneur, I'm excited to try this approach out for myself. So much of your pottery celebrates the landscape of the Catskills, and to be able to hold a little of that same love of place in my hands is a true pleasure. Thanks for creating some fun and functional mugs that help transport my mind to the trail, even on the days I'm stuck in the city. Listeners, if you would like to drink up some Catskills magic from a handmade mug, or corral your kitchen utensils in a holder featuring the Hudson River, then be sure to check out Cheyenne and Zach's work. Their pottery can be found online through Etsy and in person at select Catskills and Hudson Valley artisan stores, as well as at seasonal markets and art fairs. At Cheyenne Mallow on Instagram is the place to go to watch some behind-the-scenes pottery pics, as well as catch announcements about upcoming events. Find out that info and more, including a link to their Etsy shop, at CheyenneMallow.com. Links to all are in the show notes. Major thanks as always to Ash Lake for the awesome editing. Ash is a hiking enthusiast, podcast editor and producer, as well as screen printer and big fan of Girl Gotta Hike. The custom crafted theme song comes courtesy of Brian Bond. In need of some special sounds of your own? Email your musical inquiries to brian.e.bond@gmail.com or follow him on Instagram at Brian Bond Music. And major thanks to you, dear listeners, for tuning in to another episode of Girl Gotta Hike the podcast. I really appreciate that you have taken the time to lend your ears this way. If you've enjoyed my walk and talk with Cheyenne, or if any other episode has helped inspire you to get out and explore, then please travel over to Apple Podcasts and leave an awesome comment. Good reviews help spread the word about Girl Gotta Hike and help me to help others get outside and onto their next adventure. Girl Gotta Hike connects women with nature, confidence, and camaraderie through guided hikes and backpacking trips from New York City to the Catskills and beyond. Looking to head out on a custom-crafted trip of your own? Then be sure to click on the Hire a Private Guide tab over at girlgottahike.com and let me know what kind of adventure you're aiming to take. Custom trips are open to all and are perfect for those wanting to celebrate milestones, have a family adventure, or check off those bucket list hikes like the Devil's Path that Cheyenne and I love so much. Seeking out some hiking besties? Then click on the event schedule and sign up for a group hike instead. You can travel to trail without having a car on the monthly public transit series hikes, or go further afield with your new hiking friends on group hikes in the Hudson Valley and the Catskills. While there, you can also check out some handy blog posts, catch up on old podcast episodes, and sign up for my monthly-ish newsletter. You can also follow me on Instagram at Girl Gotta Hike or on the Girl Gotta Hike Facebook page. Until next time, happy hiking!
My like sort of secret conspiracy theory behind it all is this idea that I want people to really like respect and protect nature.